קל לשור חס, קהר פס יחס, מגיד רוחצו, מויצי מצו. קל לשור חס, קהר פס יחס, מגיד רוחצו, מויצי מצו. מורור כוי רך, שור חון אוי רך, צופון בורי חלל מרצו. קהר פס יחץ, מגיד רוחצו, מויצי מצו. קדשור חץ, קהר פס יחץ, מגיד רוחצו, מויצי מצו. מורור כוי רך, שולחון כוי רך, צופון בורך, הלל מרצו. קדשור חץ, קהר פס יחץ, מגיד רוחצו, מויצי מצו.
OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. Actually, not just another issue, but the Pesach issue. Recording and first availability, Wednesday night, the eve of the 13th of Nisan 5778, corresponding this year to March 28th. And now, here's your host, Phil Chernofsky.
Thank you, Zira. You're getting better all the time, and I have fun with that voice synthesizer. I hope you do also. Let me just mention the music at the beginning was the Seder of the Seder. Hopefully we'll get to that later. From an album by Avi Barak on the Pesach Seder, all to the tunes of Shlomo Carlebach. And that was the different steps in the Seder, repeated as they did in the song. Okay. Before we begin the Pesach show, let us say Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph Psalm 121, which is what we use when we don't say Tachanun. Please note that that's not a requirement. That's not a rule. It's one that I made up myself, but that's what I do. Shir Lama'alot, Esa Einai El Heharim, Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai, Osei Shamayim Va'aretz. Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha, Al Yanum Shomerecha. Hine Lo Yanum V'lo Yishan Shomer Yisrael. Adonai Shomerecha, Adonai Tzilecha, Al Yad Yaminecha. Yomam Hashemesh Lo Yakeka V'yoreach Balayla. Adonai Yishmorcha Mikol Ra Yishmoret Nafshecha. Adonai Yishmoret Seitecha Uvoecha Me'ata V'yad Olam. Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael Hanatunim Batzara V'ashivya Ha'omidim Bein Bayam Uvein Bayabasha Hamakom Yirachem Aleihem V'yotzieim Mitzara L'yirvacha U'me'afela La'ora U'mishibud L'gu'ula Hashta Ba'agala U'vizman Kariv V'nomar Amen. Every time I say that, I've said this many times on the show, I think first and foremost about Jonathan Pollard, someone that I have heard about for many, many years, someone that I have gotten to know personally over the last year or so. Only by phone, we speak every week or so. and just spoke to him yesterday. In all the time that I've been speaking to him, he has seemed to have the most cautious optimism of success in his life's dream, and that he and his wife should be able to come to Israel to live here. I won't go into details. I don't think I am allowed. But we should all put in an extra word of prayer for the return to Eretz Yisrael of someone who really, really helped the people of Israel at great cost to himself and his family. And we look forward to that situation easing significantly so that he will be able to come home. Now, right now, the recording, when you're listening to this, I don't know. The recording is being done. I'm looking at my watch now. It is 8:15 p.m. Israel time. Since we changed the clock last Friday, we're back to 7-hour difference to the East Coast of the United States and 10 hours difference to the West Coast, including San Francisco, whose Giants I root for in baseball and who are playing their first game of the season, first series of the season, in Los Angeles against their great rivals, the Dodgers. And looking forward to hearing of those victories of the Giants, which I won't hear about until after Shabbat and after Chag. Okay. So, I said 8:15, now it's 16 minutes after 8. In less than 24 hours, we will commence the search for chametz in our homes. Jews all over the world will do it after stars out on the eve of Erev Pesach, the eve of the 14th of Nisan, in compliance with the statement in the opening Mishnah of Masechet Pesachim, or la'arba'asar bodkin et ha'chametz l'or haner. Okay, what is this search for chametz? Nobody is supposed to wait until tomorrow night to start cleaning their homes and start getting rid of chametz. That should have been a process that many people begin at Purim time and many more in the weeks that follow, so that by the time you get to tomorrow night and you do your final, let's call it a checklist search, you will then know where there is no chametz, where there is chametz that you are including in your sale of chametz, where the chametz that you will be eating up on Thursday night and early Friday morning is, you and your family, where the chametz that will be burned on Friday morning. The search is commenced by a bracha, a once-a-year bracha, Asher Kiddishanu v'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al bi'ur chametz. The mitzvah is to get rid of chametz. The search for chametz is a rabbinic command as to how to facilitate the getting rid of chametz properly. And our sages came up with a second method. Each has its advantage and disadvantage, but together they do the job. The second process that I'm talking about is called bitul, or biur, bitul, nullification of chametz, and at the conclusion of one's search tomorrow night, one recites the bitul a passage for chametz, declaring in Aramaic or in Hebrew, if he doesn't know the Aramaic, or even an English translation, that all chametz found in his possession that has not been included in the sale should be considered null and void and like the dust of the earth. Now, the fact of the matter is that a statement of bitul is very effective. because it covers all chametz that you are unaware of. And yet it has a drawback that in case you find something of value that is chametz, and I'll give you an example in a moment, and you on Pesach, or right after Pesach, and you regret that it was included in the nullification, it might void the nullification, and you will find yourself in violation of the prohibition of possession of chametz on Pesach, which is two violations together. That's why the search is important. Because, let me just give you an illustration. Someone I know told me the story that he had a cleaning lady who regularly helped herself to a little bit of the content of his liquor closet. And rather than embarrass her and yell at her or fire her, what he did was take his good stuff, the aged scotches that he had, and hid them on a bookcase behind the books. And he left some of the cheaper bottles in the liquor cabinet, and that's what she helped herself to. One year, he forgot about them, and only discovered them after Pesach. Now, Scotch whiskey is chametz. His not knowing about their location or having forgot about them makes it unlikely that they would have been included in the sale of chametz and might cause him to regret having nullified the chametz. That's why a search is sort of like a checklist search which goes through the house and says, here, no chametz here. Good. Check. Here, there is chametz. I close it up. I put a sticker on it not to open it during Pesach. And the content is included in the sale of chametz that I have arranged through the rabbi of my shul or whatever other method. Then, so again, tomorrow night, you search for chametz. It begins with a bracha. It ends with bitul, nullification. And many people have the custom to put out 10 pieces of bread, usually wrapped in sandwich bags so the crumbs don't go anyplace. And they include that all over the house. And as the person searching for the chametz goes into a room, it's one of the things that he sees and takes while he checks out drawers and closets and things like that. When the search is over, the pieces of bread are put in a protected place to be burned in the morning, and everybody is fine. In the morning, before a certain time, the sale of chametz takes effect. You have to finish eating chametz even earlier than that, and the burning has to finish by a certain time. As part of the burning of the chametz, while it's burning, a second statement of nullification is made, and that's the whole process of getting rid of chametz from one's possession. Obviously, I must have left out some details, but we'll leave it at that, because this is just a cursory summary of different aspects of Pesach. Now, Friday, Erev Pesach, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, has a very significant role. In fact, the Torah calls what we call Erev Pesach, the Torah calls it Pesach. And what we call Pesach, the Torah calls Chag HaMatzot, the festival of matzah. But we'll talk about that also. So in the Beit HaMikdash, in addition to everything else that you're preparing at home, you have come to Yerushalayim with your family, and or you live in Yerushalayim, you've gone through the purification process, which includes 7-day period, the potion made from the ashes of the Paraduma, on the third day, on the seventh day, and the eighth day, you become tahor. And this makes it able to participate in Korban Pesach. The Korban is brought physically to the Beit HaMikdash by a member of your Chabura, the group that's going to be sharing it. And he brings it back. You have special ovens to roast it. And in the case of this year, where Erev Pesach is Erev Shabbat, the roasting must be done before Shabbat commences. And therefore, in the Beit HaMikdash, the timetable for bringing the Korban Pesach is brought earlier, as early as possible. The afternoon Tamid, the sacrifice of the afternoon, is done at the earliest time, which is a half hour after noon. And then, as quickly as possible, they do the Korban Pesach, and you bring it home, it's roasted, and it's ready as the dessert for the meal. Not going into the details, I want to talk about one other aspect of Erev Pesach, and then we'll move on to Pesach night, the Seder. That aspect is a custom that has long roots and wide-reaching practice, and that is the fast of the firstborns. Now, I must preface this. We're not talking about a required fast like the others we have in our calendar. We are talking essentially of a powerful minhag, a powerful custom that you could argue is tantamount to a rule because of how widespread its acceptance was. With a proviso, so follow. A firstborn child, if he is male, is obligated to fast on Erev Pesach. A firstborn female is not. And there's a very important reason why not. So let's talk about that at the moment. The Torah tells us that as a result of the night before the Exodus of the following morning, the firstborns of Egypt were smitten, and there was no house in which there wasn't a dead body. Now, statistically, that's not going to happen if the only people who died were the firstborn males. So we must say that the firstborn females of Egypt also were killed. And if that's the case, in commemoration, it should have developed that boys or girls, whoever's the firstborn in the family, are the ones to fast. And in fact, that is a minority opinion that exists. But the majority opinion is that girls don't fast. And one of the explanations, I think, is very important. This is not the only reason given, but it's one of the reasons. There is a midrash that tells us that the guardian angel of Egypt came before God with a complaint. He said, "My charges, the Egyptians, did a lot of bad things, but the Jews in Egypt were not such great people either. In fact, we describe the status of the Jews in Egypt at the time of the Exodus as having sunk to the 49th gate or the 49th level of impurity. So why should you kill my firstborns," asks the guardian angel of Egypt, "and let the Jewish firstborns live, the Israelite firstborns?" That's the way God wanted it, but the complaint has something to it. And the complaint is addressed by the custom of fasting, if you're a firstborn male, on Erev Pesach to make a tikkun, a repair, or to atone, if you want to say it that way, to the actions of the Jewish firstborns who were not worthy of being saved, but were saved because of God's promise. So what about the girls? The answer is the girls have nothing to be ashamed of, nothing to be embarrassed of, nothing to make a repair of, and nothing to make an atonement for. Because girls / women are the heroines of the entire Pesach process. It starts with Miriam, young girl, who prophesied in front of her father, Amram, that his decree was harsher than that of the Pharaoh. Because the Pharaoh decreed that the boys should be killed at birth and the girls should be allowed to live. Amram, as the leader of the community, who recommended that husbands separate from their wives and have no more children, because why should we bring children into a world of slavery and oppression? His decree, in essence, was for males and females not to be born. As a result of Miriam's prophecy, Amram took Yocheved, Levi's daughter, back as his wife, having already had Miriam and Aharon, and they had another child after the reunion, namely Moshe. And it continues. The Torah tells us that they were able to hide Moshe. Remember, this was a decree, a period when there was a decree that all boys born should be tossed into the river. In fact, some suggest that it was a decree that applied to all boys to be born, male or female, Jewish or otherwise, because Paro was told by his astrologers that the Redeemer of Israel would be born, and they couldn't tell him whether it would be an Israelite or an Egyptian. As it turned out, it was an Israelite named Moshe who was brought up as an Egyptian in the palace of the Pharaoh. So there's the irony there. So after 3 months, they were no longer able to hide baby Moshe. And Yocheved, his mother, does not say his father did this, says his mother did this, prepares a watertight basket and floats him on the river and sets Miriam, his sister, to stand guard over him to make sure he's okay. And it is Bat Paro, the daughter of the Pharaoh, who goes to the river to bathe and sees the basket and retrieves it and sees that it is an Israelite baby who is crying. And Miriam is right there on the spot. And when the baby Moshe refuses to nurse from a non-Jewish breast, Miriam suggests to Paro's daughter that she get her a Jewish midwife, a Jewish wet nurse, to nurse him. And she brings his mother, Yocheved. So far, the heroines are Miriam and Yocheved. I left out the midwives who defied Paro, which probably might have been Yocheved and Miriam, but maybe others get involved there also, and Bat Paro. And then we get to a much broader statement that it was in the merit of righteous women that our ancestors were redeemed from Egypt. Not to the credit of the men, because they were giving up hope, but to the credit of the women who continued to adorn themselves and perfume themselves and entice their husbands to be with them and to encourage them. And as a result, the Jewish people thrived and flourished and merited redemption. Biglal Nashim Sadkaniyot Nigalu Avotenu Mimitzrayim. So girls have nothing to atone for and nothing to make a repair of, and therefore that opinion says they don't fast on Erev Pesach. Now the other side of the coin of Erev Pesach. It's very difficult to fast on the day before a Shabbat or a holiday, especially Pesach. And I'll tell you this from personal experience, because I do fast every year. The first thing after a whole day of not eating or drinking is the first cup of wine. The second thing is a small quantity of a piece of celery, less than a kazayit, dipped in salt water. The third thing that enters me, or anyone else, 45 minutes to an hour later, is more matzah. And not more matzah, is a second cup of wine, followed by matzah, followed by moror, followed by matzah and moror together. So it wreaks havoc with one's stomach, unless you have the fortitude to handle it, the constitution to handle it. And that, combined with the fact that you're really not allowed to fast during the month of Nisan, in fact, our knowledge of there being a fast day for Bechorim on Erev Pesach comes from a negative statement in sources that say you're not allowed to fast during the month of Nisan, except for a Bechor and Erev Pesach. And then we sort of perk up and say, didn't know that, but that's where its source is. Therefore, our sages came up with a kosher method of doing away with the fast, and I believe the majority, the overwhelming majority of firstborns avail themselves of it, and it is called a siyum, a conclusion of a tractate of Gemara, or a Seder of Mishnayot, which is considered a festive occasion to which a person making such a Siyum may invite others to join, and the taking part of refreshments after the Siyum is considered a mitzvah, which overrides the fasting of the firstborns. So the standard procedure is that most firstborns go to shul after the davening in the morning of Friday this year. Somebody makes a siyum, and they drink and eat something, and then they're able to drink the rest of the day. The minority, I don't have a statistic, the minority of firstborns do not avail themselves of an out to do away with the fast, but they fast. Now, I'll tell you my personal anecdote, because it's not a halachic kind of conclusion. It just works for me. I'll tell you two things first before that. Until a bechor, firstborn boy, reaches the age of mitzvot, his father is obligated to fast for him and or to go to a siyum in order to undo his fast. If the father is also a firstborn, the minhag, the custom is that his mother, the child's mother, must fast for him because her husband is fasting for himself. I don't know how many people follow that, but it's on the books. And I find that quite interesting in and of itself. Now, I remember from when I was a kid, my father would go to a siyum, and if he didn't make it to a siyum, he would fast for me. He was not a firstborn, thanks to Aunt Phyllis, Aleh HaShalom, and he would fast for me. As I approached the age of mitzvot, I started attending siyumim on my own. My father was off the hook. I had the obligation of fasting or of going to a siyum. And so it was when I was 13, 14, 15, 16. Okay, next comes 17 years old. When I was 17 years old, I was in high school, and the Rav of my shul, Rabbi Kenetovsky, Zichrono Livracha, knew that I was learning Masechet Makot, which is a small Masechet, and I was nearing the end, and he asked me to hold off on the end, prepare it to make a siyum at the second minyan in Young Israel of Eastern Parkway. They had hundreds of people coming to both Minyanim. And I estimated at the time that I must have made the Siyum in front of 150 fellow firstborns. And based on my finishing of the Masechet and teaching the end, everybody of those 150 people were able to eat and drink on Erev Pesach. And that was my perspective all of the time. However, having made my own Siyum and realizing the joy that I felt, I also realized the lack of joy that I felt all the other Siyums where I attended somebody's Siyum, listened to him mumble through the end of a Masechet, and then eat and drink. So I didn't like the idea so much anymore, and I'm not knocking it for other people. You have to know yourself. The following year, 18 years old, I woke up late, missed the Siyum in my shul, had no choice but to fast. And I surprisingly had a very meaningful day and a very meaningful Seder. As hungry as I was, as empty as I was when we started, it was a meaningful experience because I felt like a real firstborn. I've always known that I'm a firstborn. I probably lorded it over my brothers on different occasions. But this hit me that everyone else around the Seder table was either not a firstborn and they were eating and drinking during the day, and or they were firstborn and they went to a Siyum, and I was sitting there not eating and drinking till we got up to the Seder. And my mother, I remember, being very solicitous and saying, let's move on so that Philip will be able to eat something. I said, no, it's okay, Ma, you know, whatever. And I felt, I got into the story more of being a firstborn. During the following year, before the next Pesach, I bought a Haggadah called Olat Re'iyah, which is excerpted teachings of Rav Kook, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, from his Siddur Olat Re'iyah compiled into a Haggadah. And there was a partial list of halachic points in the beginning. And the first one said that a Bechor who knows himself and feels that he will not be adversely affected by fasting should fast on Erev Pesach and not avail himself of the out of a Siyum. That made confirmed with me the feelings that I had with the previous Siyums, my one personal Siyum, and then the fasting because I got up late. And it crystallized in that Pesach of 19 when I purposely fasted and not by default. And I won't tell you how many times, although you know from other comments I've made about my age, I've been doing it ever since and hope to continue as long as I'm healthy enough to handle the fast. So that's personal, but I wanted the listeners to hear. If you say, what's he spouting here? I go to a Siyum and I'm fine with that, then that's okay. Be fine with that. Because if it affects your Seder adversely, then you're not supposed to fast and you got to get yourself out of it. So that's my story for Erev Pesach. Now we come to the Seder, and let me not go through every step, but let me focus at the moment on one thing, one big major thing, and we'll see how we branch off into other topics. But before that, let's hear another track from Avi Barak and his Pesach Seder based on Shlomo Karlbach tunes.
Come on!
Again, without access to statistics, I would say that most people are used to Man Yishtana Halayla Hazeh Mikol Halelos, etc. And hearing this Man Yishtana of the Karlbach Nigun is different and was very pleasant to listen to. So I hope your horizons are broadening, so you could take your pick. But tradition is tradition. In fact, I'll tell you a tradition of Man Yishtana, which I don't recommend getting rid of. There is an opinion brought down by a very solid old source that says that if a child or anybody at the Seder table asks a personalized question, it could be something like, you told me to wash Netilat Yadayim for Karpas, but not to make a bracha. How come? Or, how come you filled a second cup of wine right after we drank the first cup? Or, how come you have three matzot under the challah cover, under the matzah cover, and not just two from all the time? And why is an egg on the Seder plate? Any of these kind of questions, which are genuine, spontaneous questions of a child of any age, according to this source, will make it unnecessary to ask Man Yishtana. Now, I'm not recommending that you do this at home, because kindergarten kids have been preparing Man Yishtana for the last couple of months, and hopefully you'll be able to coax them at the Seder to say it in front of all those people, and chances are as good as not that they will chicken out. But Man Yishtana is a very big part of the Seder beginning. However, very important are the personalized questions, the spontaneous questions. And it's up to the Seder leader and other participants to be patient and intelligent and clever enough to answer on the level of the person who asks the question. That's something that's emphasized in the Seder and the Haggadah as well. But let's get back on track. The first of the four questions is Shebechol Halaylot Anu Ochlim Chametz U'Matzah Halayla Hazeh Kulo Matzah. On all of the nights of the year, we have chametz, unleavened bread, and matzah, unleavened bread. Halayla hazeh, but on this night, it's only matzah. There is a Haggadah called Hashir v'Hashevach, written by Rav Sorotskin. I don't remember his first name. I definitely have said this in the past, because it's one of my favorite Haggadah tidbits. Rav Sorotskin says, let's analyze this question. We have done a whole bunch of curious things at the Seder table. I referred to a few of them before, pouring a second cup of wine after drinking the first, reclining during the drinking, everybody drinking rather than just the person making Kiddush. Everybody drinks and they recline when they drink. And you wash, but you do without a bracha, and you have a small piece of karpas, and you dip it in salt water. All kind of things that a child should ask. Right before we allow or encourage the child to ask, and remember, not remember, but know, that the Man Yishtana is a backup set of questions. When a child does not have his own spontaneous questions, then we teach him to say, why is this night different from all other nights? So here we're dealing with a child who has been learning to say Man Yishtana. And the first question that he asks about is why we eat matzah. Right before he gets up to recite the questions, we have broken the middle piece of matzah, hidden the larger piece for the afikomen, and the smaller piece becomes the centerpiece and focus of the telling of the story of the Exodus. which begins when we hold this piece aloft and we say, atypically for the Haggadah, we say in Aramaic, Ha Lachma Anya, this is the bread of affliction, or this is the poor person's bread, or this is slave's bread, Diachalo Avotana Ba'ar de Mitzrayim, that our forefathers and mothers ate in the land of Egypt. Why is it in Aramaic? Because at the time the Mishnah was edited, was compiled, the vernacular was Aramaic. The common person understood and spoke Aramaic better than he understood or spoke Hebrew. So in order to make sure that all Seder participants are on the same page, so to speak, and are paying attention, we pick up this matzah and we say it in Aramaic. This is the bread of affliction that our ancestors ate in the late land of Egypt. We finish Halach Ma'anya, and we turn to the kid and say, your turn. And he gets up and says, why do we have matzah? Rav Sorotzkin poses as the question on this, hasn't he been paying attention? Of all the curious things that we have done, the one he asks about is the only one we have already answered by the statement in Aramaic, which he's supposed to understand, and if he doesn't, we explain it in English or in Hebrew or in any language that he understands, what it means. So why would he ask about matzah? The question after that is about maror, good question, the one about dipping, the one about reclining. There are other questions that are not on this list that are all very good, but the one question which he should not have asked, suggests Rabbi Sorotzkin, is the one about matzah. Rabbi Sorotzkin's answer, I think, is beautiful. He said, no, we got it wrong. The child is not asking why we eat matzah. We just told him. But that confused him. Because if matzah represents slave's bread, then where is the fluffy, sweet, beautiful-smelling challah roll that represents freedom? Why, he asked, if this night celebrates the transition from slavery to freedom, do we eat exclusively matzah? That is a brilliant question. And the answer that we give to the child and to everyone is, I just told you, Halach Ma'anya. That was only part of the answer. Good that you caught me on that. Because the second part is yet to come. And when will it come? After we tell the story of the Exodus, as the Haggadah teaches us, and by adding our own extra points and insights, we will have relived the experience of Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus. Now we go back to our matzah, that broken piece, which we already explained as poor person's bread, and we pick it up again. And we say, matzah zo she'onu ochlim al shum ma. What's the reason that we eat matzah? Well, wait a minute. 45 minutes ago, half an hour, however long it takes you to go through the Magid portion of the Seder, you already said why. Now you forgot also, and you're asking? No, because this time I have a different answer. This time I'm not going to tell you it's poor person's bread. I'm going to tell you that it represents the bread of freedom and the bread of trust in God. Because as the pasuk that we quote, the verses that we quote, when we pick up the matzah at this point in the Seder, shortly before we're going to eat from it, we say, the verses tell us that the Jews, the Israelites, did not linger in Egypt after they were told, move, to the point where they did not even prepare bread for the journey. They hastily kneaded dough and baked it quickly into matzah. Not necessarily the same matzah as we have today, but close. And they took that out, and they ate it for about a month after Yetziat Mitzrayim. So the matzah represents slaves' bread, and the matzah represents the bread of freedom. And that's why Halayla Hazeh, this night, Kulo Matzah, is exclusively matzah. Now there's more. But first listen to another track. And if I said that before and didn't play the track, I lost it. Listen to another track from Avi Barak's Pesach Seder Ala Shlomo Kalbach Tunes. And the choice of this piece is obvious. Remember before when I said that we call this holiday Pesach, God calls it Chag HaMatzot. We in davening echo that from the Torah and call it Chag HaMatzot. But I want you to understand why Chag HaMatzot is the perfect name. We're almost there. Not only does matzah represent slaves' bread and the bread of freedom, but it forms a perfect bonding of moror, which is the bitterness of the enslavement and oppression, and the korban pesach, which is the symbol of luxurious eating and nobility, luxury and nobility of freedom. So when you have the three major mitzvot of the night, which we say in the Haggadah, Rabban Gamliel Hoya Omer. Rabban Gamliel used to say, whoever does not discuss these three mitzvot, Lo Yatzah Yedei Chovato, is off the mark. What are they? Pesach, symbol of freedom and nobility and luxury. Matzah, the double symbol. And Maror, the symbol of slavery. So the matzah, especially if you picture the Hillel sandwich, which we reproduce at the Seder, and what did he do? He made a sandwich. He korech. He joined together Pesach and matzah with moror, or Pesach and moror held together by matzah, and not necessarily our hard, crunchy, Ashkenazi thin matzahs, but perhaps the softer lafa or eshtanur or wrap texture of matzah, which can be done. And if you take a round wrap, which is kosher l'Pesach, and you put in a piece of roast lamb from the Korban Pesach on a bed of lettuce representing the bitterness of life in Egypt, and wrap it together, dip it in charoset, and you have the perfect symbol of the whole story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. I can go on and on. I should, but I can't. It's getting late. With all of the extra things that I had to do in this last period of time, it's after 10:30 at night, which is nothing compared with earlier this week. Torah Tidbits, we accelerated the production to 2 days rather than three of the hard copy, which meant that Sunday night I was here till about 2:30 in the morning, and Monday till about 3:15 in the morning. And yesterday was the internet version, which took time and distribution. Today, more distribution. And it's Wednesday. Usually we do that second part of distribution on Thursday. So now I have Thursday to get my head wrapped around the things that I have to do during the day for Pesach, and then Bedikat Chametz in the evening. In top of everything else, just to get personal again, I took two of my grandsons, age 8 and 6, to Kikar Shabbat and Geula, showed them Hagalat Kelim. I brought three wine cups that I had kashered for Pesach. And we saw Tevilat Kelim, the immersion of new vessels in a mikveh. And we saw the hustle and bustle in the street in all different kinds of ways. And it was a tiring process. So that was all rolled in today, which is why I'm recording so late now. In any event, let me just remind you that starting Saturday night, Motzoi Shabbat, the first night of Chol HaMoed here in Israel, the beginning of the second day of Yom Tov, in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, we start counting the Omer. On the OU website, on the Torah Tidbits website, which is ttidbits.com, there is a link to click on an Omer chart, and you will have everything mapped out for your convenience. By the experience of many people who have told me over the years, they succeeded in counting every single night without missing one because of that Omer chart. And you're welcome to download it from ttidbits.com. On that note, I will say Shabbat Shalom, Chag Sameach, and you will hear another song, L'Hishtameach.
Chag Gadyo, Chag Gadyo, Oy Chag Gadyo. ואוכלו לגדיו, ויוכלו לגדיו. דזבינה בו בשרי זוזי, בשרי זוזי. עד גדיו, עד גדיו, אוי חד גדיו. עד גדיו, עד גדיו, אוי חד גדיו. ביוס הקרבו ונושך לשונרו, ונושך לשונרו. ויוכלו לגדיו דזבינה בו בישרי זוזי. חד גדיו, חד גדיו, אוי חד גדיו. חד גדיו, חד גדיו, אוי חד גדיו. ויוסו חוטרו ואיכו לכלבו.
ונו שח לשון רון דאוך לו לגדיו דזבינה בו בישרי זוזי הדגדיו הדגדיו אוי חדגדיו הדגדיו הדגדיו אוי חדגדיו ואוסו נורו בסורף לחוטרו דהי כלבו דנו שח לשון רודה אוכלו לגדיו דזבינה פה בישרי זוזי עד גדיו עד גדיו אוי חד גדיו חד גדיו חד גדיו אוי חד גדיו דיו סומיו וחובו לנורו דסורו לחוטרו דהיקו לכלבו דנו שח לשון רודה אוכלו לגדיו דזבינה פה בישרי זוזי חד גדיו חד גדיו אוי חד גדיו חד גדיו חד גדיו אוי חד גדיו ויו סומיו וחובו לנורו דסורו לחוטרו דהיקו לכלבו דנו שח לשון רודה אוכלו לגדיו דזבינה פה בישרי זוזי חד גדיו חד גדיו אוי חד גדיו חד גדיו חד גדיו אוי חד גדיו ויו סוסוי רודה שוסו למיו וחובו לנורו דסורף לחוט רודה היקו לכלבו דנו שח לשון רודה דיוכלו לגדיו דזבינה בו בישרי זוזי חד גדיו חד גדיו אוי חד גדיו חד גדיו חד גדיו אוי חד גדיו דהוסו אשויכת ושוחת לסוירו דשוסו למיו דחובו לנורו דסורף לחוטרו דהיקו לכלבו דנו שח לשון רודה אוכלו לגדיו דזבינה פה בישרי זוזי דנו שח לשון רודה אוכלו לגדיו דזבינה פה בישרי זוזי חד גדיו חד גדיו אוי חד גדיו חד גדיו חד גדיו אוי חד גדיו ויוסום הלוחמו ושוחט לשויכת ושוחט לסוירו ושוסו למיו דחובו לנורו וסורף לחוטרו והיקו לכלבו דלושח לשונרו ויוכלו לגדיו וזבינה בו בישרי זוזי בישרי זוזי חד גדיו חד גדיו אוי חד גדיו חד גדיו אוי חד גדיו ויוסו הקדוש ברוך הוא ושוחד למלחמו ושוחד לשויכת ושוחד לסוירו דשוסו למיו וחובו לנורו וסורף לחוטרו דהיקו לכלבו ונושח לשונרו דאוכלו לגדיו דזבינה בו בישרי זוזי